This is chapter 4, the Adi Lila, the confidential reasons for the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this chapter of the epic Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has stressed that Lord Chaitanya appeared for three principal purposes of his own. The first purpose was to relish the position of Srimati Radharani, who is the prime reciprocator of transcendental love of Sri Krishna. Lord Krishna is the reservoir of transcendental loving transactions of Srimati Radharani. The subject of those loving transactions is the Lord himself, and Radharani is the object. And here's the subject object. Thus, the subject, the Lord, wanted to relish the loving mellow in the position of the object, Radharani. The second reason for his appearance was to understand the transcendental mellow of himself. Lord Krishna is all sweetness. Radharani's attraction for Krishna is sublime, and to experience that attraction and understand the transcendental sweetness of himself, he accepted the mentality of Radharani. The third reason that Lord Chaitanya appeared was to enjoy the bliss tasted by Radharani. The Lord thought that undoubtedly Radharani enjoyed his company, and he enjoyed the company of Radharani. But the exchange of transcendental mellow between the spiritual couple was more pleasing to Srimati Radharani than to Sri Krishna. Radharani felt more transcendental pleasure in the company of Krishna than he could understand without taking her position. But for Sri Krishna to enjoy in the position of Srimati Radharani was impossible, because that position was completely foreign to him. Krishna is a transcendental male, and Radharani is a transcendental female. Therefore, to know the transcendental pleasure of loving Krishna, Lord Krishna himself appeared as Lord Chaitanya, accepting the emotions and bodily luster of Srimati Radharani. Lord Chaitanya appeared in order to fulfill these confidential desires and also to preach the special significance of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and to answer the call of Advaita Prabhu. These were secondary reasons. Sri Swarup Damodar Goswami was the principal figure amongst Lord Chaitanya's confidential devotees. The records of his diary have revealed these confidential purposes of the Lord. These revelations have been confirmed by the statements of Srila Rupa Goswami in his various prayers and poems. This chapter also specifically describes the difference between lust and love. The transactions of Krishna and Radha are completely different from material lust. Therefore, the author has very clearly distinguished between them. So here we see is that these elements that why he's appeared. So that these elements of basically of the position, Govinda Gopinath Madan Mohan, these are all the positions that Radharani draws from Krishna. Right? Krishna is the unlimited transcendental reservoir of transcendental rasa. But now, what rasa will be manifest, what Krishna will be enjoying, what he will be exchanging with the devotees, that's going to be dependent upon what devotee is in front of him. Right? Then that draws a specific rasa. Now, Radharani, therefore, will draw the deepest and most broad aspect of Krishna's person, of his rasa. Because she is who makes these forms, right? She is attracted to Krishna, therefore he is the attractive one, right? She engages in service to Krishna, therefore he's accepting it. She tastes that love for Krishna, therefore he is in that lovable position. You understand? So this then is something that Krishna himself can understand, but he himself cannot taste. because as pointed out, he's the supreme male, she's the supreme female. So the mass, they won't understand each other in this way. One, that's what makes the rasa work. Because if you understand, you lose interest. You never understand. You're always trying to figure it out. So if he wants to taste this, now, it's not that Radharani needs to taste what Krishna's tasting, because it's lower. So there's no advantage. But Krishna wants to taste what Radharani tastes because it's higher. So then in here, we see then these three aspects. Then we're getting the position of Srimati Radharani, right? Then her attraction to Krishna, and then what she experiences. Does that make sense? Right. So he'll do that by performing service to himself. Right. That he'll do through the preaching of the holy name. Right. He'll use the process. Does that make sense? The Sankirtan mission. So then, he himself taking that position, right? Then he's taking the position of her, and then taking her attraction. Then he can taste what she tastes. Does this make sense? So in all these elements of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, he's just switching the roles. That's what's then going on. This is the confidential reasons. Then everyone will benefit by coming and taking part in such pastimes. They will be able to therefore elevate themselves from this sphere to the transcendental realm. Right? That will be done through the Sankirtan mission. So technically that's secondary. Because the point is to reestablish that relationship with Krishna and to assist in Krishna tasting this mellows. Does that make sense? Right? Because the whole idea is to please Krishna. Right? But the difference in this is that here, well, it's actually not different. We're being given a very special opportunity in that in the spiritual world they're serving Radharani. But we don't know this Radharani. Right? We don't have that entrance. But by Krishna's grace, he comes in the mood of Radharani, so therefore we can serve under Radharani. Right? Because he's taken her mood. Therefore, the Sankirtan mission is service to Srimati Radharani. Right? Because it's her service to her Lord. By bringing everybody back to, again, serving Krishna. Right? Living entities here are not exactly in the habit of serving Krishna. Right, so to bring them all to that position, because Krishna will reciprocate with you as you surrender. But if you don't surrender, then how you'll serve Krishna? How he'll reciprocate? Right. Therefore, then if Krishna takes the mood of his own devotee, then he'll come out and get you, whether you're interested or not. Krishna is not going to disturb your independence. The devotees have no problem disturbing your independence, right? Isn't it? That's what half the time you hear from the temple president. You're being independent, Prabhu, you know, like that. So, like that. You know, so devotees don't have a problem in this area. Right? Does this make sense? Right? So this is, but this doesn't mean that the external has no purpose, that the external is not important. The form is always important. Because the form is what carries, or is the medium for carrying what is the actual purpose. Does that make sense? Right? The boy gives the girl a flower. The flower is not actually the point. The point is that exchange of affection. But the flower is very important because it is the ideal medium in which to show that exchange. Right? Does that make sense? He brings an old shoe. It may not have the same romantic, flavor or result. You know, instead of her taking the flower and being very pleased, she may take the shoe and start beating the boy. So, whatever. You know. Of course, it becomes a medium, but maybe not exactly what one was expecting. Does that make sense? So therefore, the Samkirtan movement is very important because it is the medium for showing one's, or developing one's affection for Krishna, showing one's affection for Krishna, and helping in this pleasing of Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So then, going through the verse 1. By the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even a foolish child can fully describe the real nature of Lord Krishna, the enjoyer of the pastimes of Braja, according to the vision of the revealed scriptures. Purport. One can ascertain the meaning of this Sanskrit shloka only when one is endowed with the causeless mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Sri Krishna, being absolute personality of Godhead, cannot be exposed to the mundane instruments of vision. He reserves the right not to be exposed by the intellectual feats of non-devotees. Notwithstanding this truth, even a small child can easily understand Lord Sri Krishna and his transcendental pastimes in the land of Vrindavan by the grace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right, so then by the mercy of Krishna, only you can know himself. Because otherwise, you won't reciprocate. So then that's not going to be very pleasing to Krishna, right? The most important thing to Krishna is his devotees and that reciprocation with them. So to be in a position where the devotee is not going to reciprocate because the devotee doesn't know he's a devotee, therefore he doesn't know who Krishna is, that's why Krishna doesn't reveal himself, right? Because they don't see Krishna. Therefore, he reciprocates that by not showing himself, right? In other words, whatever's your mood towards him, that's what you see. So, if you don't see him, he's not there to be seen. Does that make sense? So we can say, oh, why is it so hard? Why couldn't he make it easy? It's the way we do it. It's our idea. Because if we had that full love, he would be there. Right? Does that make sense? All glories to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda. All glory to Sri Advaitacharya and all glory to the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. I have described the meaning of the fourth verse. Now, O devotees, kindly hear the explanation of the fifth, right? Because in the invocation, he gave so many verses. So now he's going through and explaining that invocation, right? This is the Vedic method, is that you give the knowledge in a very concise form so that you can get an overview of it. Then you go back and explain it, right? Does that make sense? So you have to have both. That very deep, that very general idea so you can get the concept, and then the very specific so you can get, you know, understand the depth of it. Does that make sense? So you know the relationship between everything and you know the depth of everything. So you've studied it both, what do you call it, vertically and laterally, right? And otherwise, it's, you know, you should study it this way, no, you should study it that way. No, the Vedic is you're supposed to study it both, right? Whenever you have two opposing arguments that each say they're right, then the Vedic standard is they're both right if you know how to combine them. Right? You can't have one or the other. It's not one's right without the other. You know what I'm saying? Just to explain the original verse, I shall first suggest its meaning. I have given the essential meaning of the fourth verse. This incarnation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, descends to propagate the chanting of the holy name and spread love of God. Although this is true, this is but the external reason for the Lord's incarnation. Please hear one other reason, the confidential reason for the Lord's appearance. Purport. In the third chapter, fourth verse, it has been clearly said that Lord Chaitanya appeared in order to distribute love of Krishna and the chanting of his transcendental holy name, Hare Krishna. That was the secondary purpose of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. The real reason is different, as we shall see in this chapter. So he's saying secondary, and then there's real reasons. So there's always direct, indirect. So then that's why in performance of devotional service, the direct, that's taken as real. The indirect is secondary. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, it's not that you have primary and secondary, and they're just slightly, there's a significant difference. There's the reason, then there's the real reason. The real reason is what is behind it. The reason is that's what you do to get what you want. But the real reason is why did you do it in the first place, right? Isn't it? I mean, that's the whole process of devotional service. Yeah. Perform your activity, but that's not the real reason. The real reason is to please Krishna, right? But the problem is we're performing activities for the real reason of pleasing ourselves, right? That's called karma, right? But when you perform the activity for the real reason of pleasing Krishna, that's nice karma, right? Does that make sense? So these principles are always there. It's not this nice karma is some new thing. It's right here in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The devotees have been dealing with it for the last 30 years. Just they didn't know the fancy name, right? You know, that's all. Okay. And also it's very important to note that external doesn't mean bad, right? In this, how you say, modern extremist society, you know, it's either fabulous or disgusting, right? There's nothing much in between, right? Where does that come from? One may wonder, you know, why is this so prominent? Have you ever seen how the perspective of 13-year-old good-looking girls view the world? Right? That's where your concepts are coming from. Right? So don't puff yourself up thinking you're much bigger and more mature and all that. Yes, your skills are, your knowledge is, so many of your abilities are, but your emotional view on the world is no better than that. Otherwise, why is it extreme? You know what I'm saying? Catch it? So that's the point, is that... Okay. So, so external is important, but external isn't the last word, right? So when Lord Chaitanya, when Sri Damodar tells Lord... When Lord Chaitanya asks Ramananda Rai, excuse me, you know, what is the, you know... perfection of human life, what's the purpose and all that, and then he says to, you know, properly follow Varnashram Dharma. Lord Chaitanya says that's external. So now, basically speaking, 99.9% of the devotees will take it Lord Chaitanya has rejected Varnashram Dharma simply because the word external is used, and external is bad, even though everybody spends their time decorating the external, right? What to do? You go figure, you know, how this works. But whatever it is, any way that you can take something and put it down, then, you know, that makes you all feel all that much better. So here's some transcendental aspects. But here, external is the form, right? But he didn't reject it. If he rejected it, why is Ramananda Rai following his position in Varnashram and Lord Chaitanya is following his? Their meeting was according to Varnashram. Their leaving was according to Varnashram. The whole environment in which it was all Varnashram. So how is it he rejected Varnashram? He rejected it as the end, as the real reason. Perfecting Varnashram is not our purpose in life. That's not our ultimate purpose. It's no one's ultimate purpose. Karmis, maybe. But even them, it's not. They want to get to the heavenly planets. So it's even external for the gross materialists. Right? It's a form. But the devotees use that form for serving Krishna, pleasing Krishna. Does that make sense? So in this way we can understand, otherwise we'll make a mistake taking the Sankirtan mission is external. And then some rasiks will try to therefore say it's not so important. Right? But if it's not so important, it would have been written off and we wouldn't have gotten a whole chapter, you know, to explain it. The importance of the Sankirtan mission. So what we see is that the Sankirtan is very important. But through the medium of the Sankirtan, you can reawaken your love of Krishna. That's the real purpose. That's the real thing. The other is the form. Right? Because love of Krishna... that is a solid thing. the form you manifest it through can be anything. Does that make sense? There must be a form, but that form is changeable. But the love, that's solid. That's fixed. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. The scriptures proclaim that Lord Krishna previously descended to take away the burden of the earth. To take away this burden, however, is not the work of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The maintainer, Lord Vishnu, is the one who protects the universe. But the time to lift the burden of the world mixed with the time for Lord Krishna's incarnation. Purport. We have information from Bhagavad Gita that the Lord appears at particular intervals to adjust a time-worn spiritual culture. Lord Sri Krishna appeared at the end of Dwapara Yuga to regenerate the spiritual culture of human society and also to manifest his transcendental pastimes. Vishnu is the authorized Lord who maintains the created cosmos, and he is also the principal deity who makes adjustments when there is improper administration in the cosmic creation. But Sri Krishna, being the primeval Lord, appears not in order to make such administrative adjustments, but only to exhibit his transcendental pastimes and thus attract the fallen souls back home, back to Godhead. However, the time for administrative rectification and the time for Lord Sri Krishna's appearance coincided at the end of the last Dwapara Yuga. Therefore, when Sri Krishna appeared, Vishnu, the Lord of Maintenance, merged with him because all the planetary parts of the Absolute Personality of Godhead merged with him during his appearance. Right, so Krishna doesn't maintain the universe. He just performs his pastimes with his loving devotees. Vishnu, he maintains the universe. So part of maintenance is seeing that everybody is doing everything right. Right, because maintenance comes in the position of pastimes. Right, it's in the position of avideya. Right, so you have the creator, the maintainer, the destroyer. Right, so you create the environment, you maintain it, and then you destroy it, right? You'll switch these. Does that make sense? So in this way, the pastimes are the abhideya. They're what's being done. So in abhideya also is maintenance or nourishment. Right? Does that make sense? You can also take pastimes and put them as the prayojan, as something you get to. But when you're taking, as we see here, the male and female principle, you know, where Radha and Krishna meet, where do they meet? They meet in abhideya. Right? Krishna is the, you know, existence. Radharani is pleasure. So where do they meet? They meet through pastimes. You understand? These are overlapping definitions that they can be used depending upon what you're trying to establish in both ways. Does that make sense? That's why many things sometimes are unclear. So therefore, devotees drop this idea of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, because it doesn't. It's not this nice little put in a little box, you know, thing like this. They have general principles that overlap. Everything depends upon everything else, right? Does that make sense? So there's always qualities of one and the other. Otherwise, how do they match? Right? When the complete Supreme Personality of Godhead descends, all other incarnations of the Lord meet together within him. Lord Narayana, the four primary expansions, Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha, Matsya, and other Leela incarnations, the Yuga avatars, the Manvantars, incarnations as many other incarnations as there are, all descend in the body of Lord Krishna. In this way, the complete Supreme Godhead, Lord Krishna himself, appears. At that time, therefore, Lord Vishnu is present in the body of Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna kills the demons through him. Thus, the killing of the demons is but secondary work. I shall now speak of the main reason for the Lord's incarnation. Right? Because that's mentioned, he says he's coming to establish Dharma. So much of the time we'll take that as the main, right? Because for us, that's the primary thing. If you're the controller, then, you know, everything's fine. But actually, you know, the enjoyer, that aspect is more important for Krishna. He is already in control. Right? He is the enjoyer, so then taking that position, that's what's wonderful. Right? So for rasa, then he is comfortable being controlled by his devotees. Right? The Lord's desire to appear was born from two reasons. The Lord wanted to taste the sweet essence of the mellows of love of God, and He wanted to propagate devotional service in the world on the platform of spontaneous attraction. Thus He is known as supremely jubilant and as the most merciful of all. Purport. During the period of Lord Krishna's appearance, the killing of asuras or non-believers such as Kamsa and Jarasandha was done by Vishnu, who is within the person of Krishna. Right, because they see they're inimical towards Krishna, therefore Krishna manifests as their enemy. Right? Does that make sense? It's rasa. So Krishna is always engaging in rasa with everybody, though they don't know it. Right? That's maya. Maya is you think Krishna is not there, but Krishna is there always. He's always engaging in pastimes of the living entity. We're the ones that are not noticing it. Does that make sense? Right? The mother's always taking care of the child. The child doesn't notice it. She's trying to dress him. He's trying to walk off. Right? You know. Does that make sense? So he's always... So that's the illusion. We think Krishna's not involved. We think it's different. We think it's Kali Yuga. The Shastras don't work anymore. Nothing functions anymore. All that works now is just my interest in whatever I'm interested in. Right? So is that illusion or is that illusion? Right? Or possibly, maybe, it's illusion. Right? But the point is Krishna's always involved. How you see him is how he comes to you. Right? You don't trust him. You only believe in yourself. Therefore, Krishna comes to you in the forms of all different environments and personages that increase your lack of trust. Right? That's how you see him. You know, just like for the demons, he comes as death. So your lack of trust in others, your insecurity, that's all Krishna, because that's how you see him, so he comes to you in this form. Very simple. He's always with you. Yes.
There is a verse, he says that when Krishna comes in Mathura,
Everyone sees him differently.
And the ignorant, they see him as a universal form.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So then, everybody is seeing him all differently, and then like universal form means whatever's manifest before you. That's why then, in starting on the spiritual life, you start with that universal form that you've been taking as illusion. It means you take it as normal. That's the illusion. But then you start to see Krishna in it. Right? So that's the point. It's a form. So it's seeing Krishna in that way is very nice. It's elevating. But it's still the Brahman platform. So the real reason is the relationship with Krishna. Right? And with Bhagavan. So that's the internal reason for dealing with the universal form. To see Krishna everywhere. Right? The external is simply to purify and connect all of your material concepts to the Lord. Right? But the internal is through that then to develop that love for Him. That's what will keep one moving forward. Otherwise, one may think this is enough. Okay? Okay. So Krishna in Braja, He's that because of Radharani. Because of the love of Mother Yashoda, Ananda Baba, the cowherd boys. That's why he manifests that form. Therefore, if you have a demon in front of him, it's not Krishna, it's Vishnu. Right? Does that make sense? Such apparent killing by Lord Krishna took place as a matter of course and was an incidental activity for him. But the real purpose of Lord Krishna's appearance was to stage a dramatic performance of his transcendental pastimes at Brajabhumi, thus exhibiting the highest limit of transcendental mellow in the exchanges of reciprocal love between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. These reciprocal exchanges of mellows are called rag bhakti, or devotional service to the Lord in transcendental rapture. Lord Sri Krishna wants to make known to all the conditioned souls that he is more attracted by rag bhakti than vaidhi bhakti, or devotional service under scheduled regulations. It is said in the Vedas, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.27, Raso Vai Saha, The Absolute Truth is the reservoir for all kinds of reciprocal changes of loving sentiments. He is also causelessly merciful, and he wants to bestow upon us this privilege of Rag Bhakti. Thus, he appeared by his own internal energy. He was not forced to appear by any extraneous force. You also notice in here that it's going back and forth. It's not really making that much distinction between Lord Chaitanya and Krishna. Right? Braja Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. So it'll just move back and forth between these verses. Lord Chaitanya appeared for these reasons, and it's showing Krishna because it's the same person. So Krishna also appears always for, means he performs the activities of the external reasons, but he appears for the internal reasons. So therefore, if Krishna is coming as Lord Chaitanya, it's still Krishna, so it's still going to be the same. But the difference was, in all other, these other manifestations of Krishna, he's coming as Krishna in his mood. Right? But in this incarnation, he's coming in Radharani's mood. Right? That's what makes it special. That's what makes it different. So we see is that the Vaidhi is the form, but the Rag is actually what makes it interesting. So as sadhakas, the form is always followed, even if one is on the platform of Rag. It's a misnomer to think that if I'm on Rag, I don't follow the Vaidhi. Because where does one get that idea from? Krishna follows it. Right? And Rag's more important to Krishna than Vaidhi, but he follows the rules. Right? But because you're following the rules to please Krishna as a medium only, it's not called Vaidhi. It's called Rag. Therefore, it's only the form. But where the form becomes the important, as the medium also becomes, directs the spontaneity of it, that it has to come, the spontaneity is also then directly using the, it manifests through the form, then we call that Vaidhi. Right? But where the form is only a excuse for expressing the Rag, then it goes beyond the form of the Vaidhi. That's called Rag. Right? Otherwise, some form has to be there. It's not just Bhav. Otherwise, how is there Rasa, Bhav, this, that? There are forms. But the central principle is the natural attraction rather than the scheduled form. Does that make sense? Lord Krishna thought, all the universe is filled with the conception of my majesty, but love weakened by that sense of majesty does not satisfy me. Right? Because it's not that intense. Right? When someone's very, very formal with you, how much it doesn't have the fullness, it doesn't have the intensity. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Side point. Therefore, that's why sometimes it bewilders people that informality becomes so prominent as a relationship develops, and they think, what happened? But no, what's happening is the intensity or the depth of it is greater, therefore there's less formality. Right? But still one has to be careful of proper etiquette and everything else. If one regards me as the Supreme Lord and himself as a subordinate, I do not become subservient to his love, nor can it control me. In whatever transcendental he can't become subservient, because you're seeing him as greater. He has to manifest as greater. So how does he become subservient? Like that. In whatever transcendental mellow my devotee worships me, I reciprocate with him. That is my natural behavior. Right? This is that explanation of that Bhagavad Gita principle. Purport: the Lord, by his inherent nature, right, reveals himself before his devotees according to their inherent devotional service. The Vrindavan pastimes demonstrated that although generally people worship God with reverence, the Lord is more pleased when a devotee thinks of him as his pet son, personal friend, or most dear fiancé, and renders service unto him with such natural affection. The Lord becomes a subordinate object of love in such transcendental relationships. Such pure love of Godhead is unadulterated by any tinge of superfluous non-devotional desires. and is not mixed with any sort of fruit of action or inferior philosophical speculation. It is pure and natural love of Godhead, spontaneously aroused in the absolute stage. This devotional service is executed in a favorable atmosphere, freed from material affection. So he reciprocates this, but it's only there if everything else is removed. So therefore, the inspiration coming from karma or jnana, though very useful for the sadhaka to elevate himself, is not going to be useful on the stage of pure unalloyed devotional service. Right? Pure devotional service, it will be useful, but not in pure unalloyed. So therefore, at some point, those are left. When one comes to the platform of bhava, then the rag becomes the prominent element. So they have no function anymore. They have no purpose anymore. But to get one there, they're useful. Right? So therefore, the same extremist mentality, because it's mixed devotional service, we throw it out. But hey, we just wanted to, let you in on a secret. There's a good chance that you're performing mixed devotional service. Right? So therefore, if you throw it out, what do you got? Right? It's called the big shunyavad. Right? So we want to avoid that. So, therefore, but we understand there's something higher. This is what pleases Krishna. So the rules, the forms, engaging our different desires and in the way of emotions, senses, in the field of knowledge, all these things then can be useful to elevate ourselves to the platform of pure love. And from that platform, we can get to the place of pure unalloyed love. Right? Because unless you get the pure love, how are you going to get the pure unalloyed love? Right? So this extremist mentality then puts us in the position that we're going to go from pure ignorance, pure unalloyed ignorance, to pure unalloyed love. A little extreme, it works great, you got your little dinky bicycle, or you're taking it off a cliff somewhere, don't forget your parachute. Then, it maybe works for you. But the problem is you can't do that all day, right? So that's the point, is you want something that can always be performed, always be utilized. Therefore, we go from pure unalloyed ignorance to mixed ignorance, up to into passion, into goodness, which is mixed, then to pure goodness, then to pure unalloyed goodness. Right? Does that make sense? So we take ourselves through these things here. Pure unalloyed, here we mean in the way of the affection. Right? As far as tattva, there's only pure goodness. In whatever way my devotees surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Prita. So now the Gita verse has been quoted. So we see here is that all these literatures, whatever's in Bhagavad Gita, it's what all is explained. All it is Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita take it further. Basically, you can say Bhagavatam is the literature, Bhagavad Gita is giving the essential points that is there, Chaitanya Charitamrita then expands those specifically to Krishna and Braja, right, and the relationship with him. Does that make sense? So this idea, okay, read Bhagavad Gita, now we move on. No, when you move on, all you're going to meet is the principles given in Bhagavad Gita, but now you're going to be finding the depth that they go, right? So even though it's very technical, anything technical always has its counterpart in rasa. Otherwise, what's the meaning of it? How can there be rasa unless there's some definition of it? And what's the use of a definition if it's not something that's used? So the two go together. Right? And we see the acharyas, to that depth that they go in tattva, that depth they can go in rasa. Right? And vice versa. And you see, while they're talking some very receipt point, they'll just suddenly pop into some very, the technical point of the epistemology or ontology and stuff like this. They're just going to some really technical point back and forth, or vice versa. They're giving some very technical treatise on something and then just click into something out on rasa. Because it's non-different. It's just the explanation of it and then the, how you say, the form that it takes. You know, the taste that's there. Does that make sense? Yeah. Purport. In the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna affirms that formerly, some 120 million years before the Battle of Kurukshetra, some 120 million, he explained the mystic philosophy of the Gita to the sun god. The message was received through the chain of disciplic succession. But in course of time, the chain being broken somehow or other, Lord Sri Krishna appeared again and taught Arjuna the truths of the Bhagavad Gita. At that time, the Lord spoke this verse, 4:11, to his friend Arjuna. If one cherishes pure love, If one cherishes pure loving devotion to me, thinking of me as his son, his friend, or his beloved, regarding himself as great and considering me his equal or inferior, I become a subordinate to him. Purport. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, three kinds of devotional service are described, namely bhakti, ordinary devotional service, shuddha bhakti, pure devotional service, and vidha bhakti, mixed devotional service. When devotional service is executed with some material purpose, involving food and activities, mental speculations, or mystic yoga, it is called mixed or adulterated devotional service. Besides bhakti yoga, the Gita also describes karma yoga, jnana yoga, and dhyana yoga. Yoga means linking with the Supreme Lord, which is possible only through devotion. Fruit of activities ending in devotional service, philosophical speculation ending in devotional service, and the practice of mysticism ending in devotional service are known respectively as karma yoga, jnana yoga, and dhyana yoga. But such devotional service is adulterated by three kinds of material activities. For those grossly engaged in identifying the body as the self, pious activity or karma is recommended. For those who identify the mind with the self, philosophical speculation or jnana yoga is recommended. But devotees standing on the spiritual platform have no need of such material conceptions of adulterated devotion. Adulterated devotional service does not directly aim for love of the Supreme Personality Godhead. Therefore, service performed strictly in conformity with the revealed scriptures is better than such vida bhakti, because it is freed from all kinds of material contamination. It is executed in Krishna consciousness solely to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who are spontaneously devoted to the Lord and have no aims for material gain are called attracted devotees. They are now spontaneously attracted to the service of the Lord, and they follow in the footsteps of self-realized soul. Their pure devotion, shuddha bhakti, manifested from pure love of Godhead, surpasses the regulative principles of the authoritative scriptures. Sometimes loving ecstasy transcends regulative principles. Such ecstasy, however, is completely on the spiritual platform and cannot be imitated. The regulative principles help ordinary devotees rise to the stage of perfect love of Godhead. Pure love for Krishna is the perfection of pure devotion, and pure devotional service is identical with spontaneous devotional service. Flawless execution of regulative principles is exhibited in the Vaikuntha planets, but strictly executing these principles, or by strictly executing these principles, one can be elevated to the Vaikuntha planets, but spontaneous pure loving service is found in Krishna Loka alone. So these mixes are there because we're mixed. Then they're used, but as being pointed out, the goal has to be pure love of God. It says if it says it ends in devotional service, then that's there, because it's ending. The devotional service is there, but the point is you want to develop love for God. So you'll take up service, but that service then has to end in love, be aimed at love of Godhead, right? Yes.
Can this mystic yoga be used in pure devotional service by aiming at Krishna?
Can the mystic yoga be used? Yes, it can be. The problem is it doesn't work so good in this age, because to be able to use it in this pure mechanical form, then you have to get yourself to the point of dhyan, or meditation, and then samadhi. Then you can come to the point of seeing the Supreme Lord, then surrendering to Him and taking up devotional service. The problem is the first six stages to get yourself there can take a long time, right? So the problem is elements of it are used. They're naturally part of the thing, but to use it in its regular state will be much more difficult. It's like that. So we prefer, therefore, we use more on the elements of karma and jnana in for the, you know, purification states, and once one is more pure, then the elements of jnana are used along with it, like that. So we see then Buddhi Yoga, that's described in the Gita. So third chapter is describing karma yoga, where you're just engaging the activities. Then the next chapter shows that higher than that is jnana yoga, yeah. Then engaging the mind, you know, through the speculative process, like that. Because when we say the karma, we mean the emotions, not so much the intellectual application where the mind is accepting and rejecting based on the speculative process. Then the fifth chapter then combines the two, because then you're going to get very good results, because problem is karma doesn't use knowledge and the path of knowledge doesn't use activity. So when you mix the two, knowledge and activity, that's when you get realization, right? Then you add into that the focus on the Supreme Lord, then you have a very strong process. That's called Buddhi Yoga. The combination of karma, jnana, and jnana and bhakti, those all mixed, then is your Buddhi Yoga, with the purpose of the other ones drop off as you become more situated in the devotional process. So here we see is that is the downside of the mixed devotional service has to be brought out, because we don't want to ever think that's good enough. It has to come to the point of pure, unalloyed devotional service. But the process is there. So within it, in other words, then what is the whole point? How would you make a distinction, right? You have karma, so it's different between karma and karma yoga, right? So karma yoga then means that you're performing the karma with the idea of being situated in devotional service. Does that make sense? So that puts it into the karma yoga category. Now, karma yoga, as we would see it, is dynamic, and karma yoga is not so ideal. Then, you know, as mixed, what would make the difference? The difference will be one's consciousness, right? Is the fruitive aspect of it the important part for you? But because you're a devotee, you are connecting it to Krishna, right? And then you get the result, which makes you happy. Then somehow or another, you connect that to Krishna, right? That you would call mixed devotional service. Does that make sense? The other, where you're using karma, your activities are engaged in Krishna's service, it technically is mixed devotional service, but you generally don't call it that way. That you would call more karma yoga. Or you would just call it devotional service, where you know, technically you're engaging the karmic aspects. Does that make sense? So it's all in the consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? It's just like, what's the difference between a Grihamedi and a Grihasta?
What? Consciousness.
It's simply consciousness. Because in the Bhagavatam, when it's describing the Grihamedi, right, it's describing someone who's following all the pious activities given in the Vedas. Right? He's taking care of the family, he's following Garbhadan, he's doing all the different things that are expected of a Grihasta. But he's called a Grihamedi. So what's the difference between a Grihasta and a Grihamedi then?
The Grihamedi is selfish and Grihasta is pleasing Krishna.
Yeah, so that's the point. The Grihasta, Krishna is the center of the house, the Grihamedi himself is the center of the house. That's all. Krishna may be involved, but he's one of the circles around the house. That's a Grihamedi. Right? So there's the gross form, yes, the Grihasta is the one who's pious and that. The Grihamedi is the one who's breaking all the principles, disgusting, terrible, stinky, smelly, you know, rotting, composting, you know, all those kind of things. But, you know, that's great for getting you out of the material world into the devotional process. Then what? Now I'm perfect? No. Now we apply the same formulas on in devotional service. That then moves us from neophyte to the madhyam, right?
moves us from karma yoga into jnana yoga. Then you apply it again on jnana yoga, and then it'll move on from jnana yoga into bhava. Right? Then we apply it again on bhava, then it separates us from getting stuck in bhava to coming to prema. Right? Does that make sense? So we keep applying the same perspective, but now it's more and more fine. You know? Otherwise we keep this very gross, it works very nicely. But who do you have to keep it really gross and simple for? Right? I think the next word after the simple, you know, it's simple is stupid. Right, yeah. Okay? So if you want to identify yourself as a kid, you know, that's not so smart, then go on and just, you know, keep it simple. All right? And you can add the next word. Simple is there, but what I'm saying is simple doesn't mean simpleton. Sophisticated is also very simple. The most sophisticated things are always very simple. But we have this idea that simple means unsophisticated, right? If there's plenty of mud and, you know, stuff like that, that's simple, right? That's why devotees are not living out on the farms, right? Too much mud, isn't it? Why do we have an asphalt road from our goshala to the temple? Too much mud. Right? When only brahmacharis lived over there, it was mud. Nobody cared. But as soon as the grihasthas moved over there, then they can't have any mud. So they made the road pukka. Just a little history for anybody who didn't know. Like that. You understand? So that's why there's no devotees hardly living on their farms. And if they do, there's nice roads and there's their cars and everything like that. You know? Like that. Isn't it? You know the place. Yes.
Maharaj, according to mood, could you compare Vaidhi Bhakti to Karma Yoga?
Could Vaidhi Bhakti to Karma Yoga? Can you, by mood, means you could, means Karma Yoga is going to have to follow the form of Vaidhi. But you'll see that in that it may have more of an emphasis on the Vedic as opposed to Pancharatrik. Or Bhagavat. You understand? But at the same time, you wouldn't, because there are those who follow the Vaidhi Bhakti in pure love, in Vaikuntha. You understand? Like that. So it's there. Even Dwarka, you have it's by rules. So it's pure love. But it's still, the rules are the form. So you can have a pure platform of Vaidhi Bhakti, but for us, that's not our interest. Therefore, we disregard that side. But it's accepted as a bona fide position. But it's just, we're not interested. Right? Notice in here when they're talking rasa, how many rasas were explained?
Three.
Three, yeah. Because these are the ones where the spontaneous love is manifested. Below that is you're seeing Krishna as senior, you're a servant. Therefore, he can't be subservient. It doesn't give the same taste. Right? But those in the other three need servants. Therefore, that rasa is there. Technically speaking, in Braj, Shantaras isn't even counted as a rasa. They'll only count four. But even then, if you really want to be technical, only three are counted. But they're supported by the other two. You need an environment in which to have devotion. And you need people who are making the arrangements. Right? So it's going to be there. But within that, the important thing are those three. That's why you see all the pastimes are between the cowherd boys, the gopis, and Mother Jashoda, and all that. The other aspects are there, but you don't see it so much. Right? Does that make sense?
Could you say that the surroundings in which the pastimes take place are Shantaras?
The surroundings, can you say, are the surroundings in which it takes place Shantaras? The Haladini potency manifests the conjugal rasa. The Samvit potency manifests the Vatsalya, the parental, the friendship, and the servitor rasa. And the Sandini potency manifests all the, you know, all the birds and the cows and the trees and everything like that. Everybody in the Shanta Rasa. So that comes out of the Sandini potency. Right? So then you could say yes. Right? So technically they're expansions of the Dham. You know, like that. So that element there for pastimes. Right? Like that. So Nila then the pastimes go on because everybody's manifest. You know, so like that. These are fine. They're overlapping points, but they're like that. Is that okay? Yeah. Yes.
We hear that Madhavendra Puri was the first one who exhibited this conjugal love. But also he said that he in the spiritual world is a cultivation.
No. That would be improper. That was an improper presentation through the English language. You want to replace A with the. A Kalpavrikshatri with the Kalpavrikshatri. He is the Kalpavrikshatri. Everybody else is expanding from him. Right? Right? Divyad Vindaranya Kalpadrumara. That Kalpadrumara, that's Madhavendra Puri. Right? So you have a problem with that?
No problems.
I like Madhavendra Puri.
It seems that the Kalpavrikshatri can have what it has,
Asarasa,
or...
He is that, but he's explaining. You know what I'm saying? It's like this. You don't have to be in conjugal ras to explain it. Does that make sense? Okay. So, who are we hearing 10th canto from? Okay. And Shukadev Goswami in Vrindavan is? Which is in which rasa? Okay. So, therefore, now it's being revealed through Madhavendra Puri. And it's being described by Sukadev Goswami, right? So then, what's the problem?
He said that he manifests this Mahabhava, which only Radharani and Lord Chaitanya manifest, means emotions.
Yes, okay. So, okay. Mahabhava is something that is, of all the 10 forms of prema, then it is the highest. In that Mahabhava, it has 3 divisions. Right? I can't remember all the names, but I think it's 3. Maybe it's only 2. But, in other words, Mahabhava, on that, it is something that basically you could say is exclusive to the gopis. And that's all gopis. Means not the parental ras, but in the conjugal ras. Right? And it is also tasted by those cowherd boys who assist in those conjugal pastimes. Right? You know, like Madhu Mangal, Subal, you know, those who are confidential friends. Right? It means that you have 4 kinds of friends. Those who are equal, those who are superior, those who are junior, and those who are confidential. So the confidential friends, they can also get a touch of that Mahabhava. It's not they're not tasting it like the gopis, but they have an entrance into it, right? Okay. So then you have that. Then, okay, that's a general thing. Then within it, then the higher stage has got another name, so I think there is 3. That'll be described in here. It might even be in this chapter. Like that. Is that then you have the Mahabhava tasted by the gopis of Srimati Radharani's group. Right? Then you have the Madan Nayaka Mahabhava, which is what's exclusively tasted by Srimati Radharani. Okay? Then in that, when that's manifest, when she's manifesting that mood, even the trees and the creepers manifest feelings of jealousy. Okay? Let alone the tree she's sitting directly under. Okay? Now no problem? No, no. Okay. Just a few verses and we'll end. It's time to go for darshan. Okay. Devotional service. Okay. Devotional service rendered to me by the living beings revives their eternal life. Oh, my dear damsels of Braja, your affection for me is your good fortune. It is the only means by which you have obtained my favor. Purport. Pure devotional service is represented in the activities of the residents of Brajabhumi. Vrindavan. During a solar eclipse, the Lord came from Dwarka and met the inhabitants of Vrindavan at Samantapanchika. The meeting was intensely painful for the damsels of Brajabhumi, because Lord Krishna had apparently left them to reside at Dwarka. But the Lord obligingly acknowledged the pure devotional service of the damsels of Braja by speaking this verse, Bhagavatam 10:82-44. Then other verses. Mother sometimes binds me as her son. She nourishes and protects me, thinking me utterly helpless. My friends climb on my shoulders in pure friendship, saying, "What kind of big man are you? You and I are equal." If my beloved consort reproaches me in a sulky mood, that steals my mind from their reverent hymns of the Vedas. Yeah, it also steals the husbands, right? When the wife deals like that, he can't study a shastra anymore. Says like that. It's easy to say. Taking these pure devotees with me, I shall descend and sport in various wonderful ways, unknown even in Vaikuntha. I shall broadcast such pastimes by which even I am amazed. The influence of Yogamaya will inspire the gopis with the sentiment that I am their paramour. Neither the gopis nor I shall notice this, for our minds will always be entranced by one another's beauty and qualities. Pure attachment will unite us even at the expense of moral and religious duties. Destiny will sometimes bring us together and sometimes separate us. I shall taste the essence of these rasas, and in this way I shall favor all the devotees. Then by hearing about the pure love of the residents of Braja, devotees will worship me on the path of spontaneous love, abandoning all rituals of religiosity and fruitive activity. Krishna manifests his eternal human-like form and performs his pastimes to show mercy to the devotees. Having heard such pastimes, one should engage in service to him. Here, the use of the verb bhavet, which is in the imperative mood, tells us that this certainly must be done. Non-compliance would be abandonment of duty. Just as these desires are the fundamental reason for Krishna's appearance, whereas destroying the demons is only an incidental necessity, so for Sri Krishna Chaitanya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, promulgating the Dharma of the age is incidental. When the Lord desired to appear for another reason, the time for promulgating the religion of the age also arose. Thus, with two intentions, the Lord appeared with the devotees and tasted the nectar of prema with the congregational chanting of the holy name. Thus he spread Samkirtan even among the untouchables. That's us. Okay. He wove a wreath of the holy name and prema with which he garlanded the entire material world. In this way, assuming the sentiment of devotee, he preached devotional service while practicing itself. Jai. Okay, we'll end here. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki. Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.